Hey, awesome nerds, and welcome to another episode of D&D and TV, the weekly podcast where we rewatch television shows we really enjoy and talk about how the themes, concept, and characters could be used in different role-playing games. I am your host, Jeremy Talaman, and joining me this week is my co-host, Danny Calamari, who's currently tossing pies at meditating monks.
How dare they meditate on my time when I'm cooking pies?
That's right. Yep. That's right. I mean, I'm wondering about how you managed to get the pies to really arc that well and like aim them. Reminds me of a lot of the old games, like, what was it, Total War? Oh, I can't remember. Anyway, I'm showing my age now.
Just really
some game with tanks.
At the end of the day, it's just really high rolls, man. Just really lucky yep. high rolls, and definitely not a weighted dice.
It's all about that. And if not, you just throw the dice at the DM, and that'll solve the problem as well. We are talking about Avatar The Last Airbender, the animated series from 2005. We're up to episode 3 of season 1, or book 1, as they call it, which is Air. This is episode 3, The Southern Air Temple, in which, after his departure from the Southern Air Temple 100 years ago, an excited Aang finally returns home, but is disillusioned by what he finds there.
Boom, boom, boom.
That's sad.
Yeah.
This was a sad little episode for him. Lots of character building in this one. Basically, they want to go to the Air Temple. They do. Turns out everyone's dead, which was kind of expected after 100 years, but Aang really brings home to Aang. But at the same time, Zuko's off getting his boat fixed and coming across a new bad guy. And, you know, that new bad guy's all like, hey, the Avatar's back. I'm going to go find him. That's pretty much it.
Yeah.
That's the episode. I think my synopsis is better than the official one from IMDb. But I like how these two stories interweave.
Yeah.
Like, it's just as one's starting to flag, we jump over to the other one.
Yeah.
Now, but it's also as one is starting to get interesting, we jump back to the other one.
Yeah. No, they do love jumping back and forth between them, but I actually think they do it pretty effectively.
Well, I was wondering, I'm going to stick with my theory that Zuko's actually meant to be at one of the party and he's at the table with the players.
Yeah.
The other players. And this is that really good way when the game master has a split party of you wait until something interesting has happened.
Yeah.
And then you jump over to the other people and build up their tension and then jump back to the person who was doing something.
Yeah, that's exactly what I do every time they split the party.
Yeah.
I'm like, well, if you're going to split the party, that's fine, but then you're going to have to wait on a cliffhanger every time I go back and forth.
Yeah, even if it's just a cliffhanger of a dice roll.
Yeah.
It's like, all right, I'm going to get you to make that persuasion check, and now we're jumping back to these guys making cakes. Just sitting there making the cakes for quite a while. As long as the person who made the roll doesn't forget what they got in the meantime because they're too busy watching the other party. Or the rest of the party.
Yeah.
It's just, the more I see of Zuko, the more I think he is just another player. Like when they land and they're like, we can't tell them that they know the Avatar, where the Avatar's back. And, oh, we've got to explain what happened to our smashed up boat. And he just goes, Uncle, tell Commander Zhao what happened.
Yeah.
Like, it's such a yes and to the game master, like, NPC, you tell them. No, you tell them. No, you tell them.
And then for it to be, what's it called? It doesn't even last long, that deception, does it?
No.
Because the whole plan falls apart because of course the others would talk.
Yeah. Like, there's no reason. They send the guards out and they come back in. And it's like, yes, we interrogated them as they confirmed the Avatar. It's like, maybe we should have talked to our guards. I never said don't tell them anything. All right, I guess it's good.
Yeah, no, this does really
bragging about it. It's great.
It does really drive home that he is, in fact, a player character.
Yeah, he's just not planning through anything.
No.
But he's even got his own little antagonist. Like, he's got his own villain to fight, which is Commander Zhao. Like, someone to play off, but also to show, I think for the audience in this case, all the other players, that not all the Fire Nation people are like Zuko.
Yeah.
Like, Zuko does have that sense of honor and he's trying to regain it. But you've got also this person who will strike at someone when their back is turned, who will just, you know, betray his commanding officer or his prince so that he gets the better promotion.
Yeah. And
yeah,
I was just going to say as well, like, up to this point, like, we've kind of, Zuko's been our, the most evil, quotation marks, fire dude that we've seen so far in the show in the first two episodes. And it kind of, in the context of someone like Aang and people like Aang Katara, he seems really, like, evil and really, like, just like a bad person. And then it's good that it, as this expands the world a little more this episode, to then show that, no, Zuko is, like, not that bad of a dude. Like, in comparison to some others. Yeah.
Yeah, no, I really like that. That it does become, that even evil has someone who's more evil.
Yeah.
That we can't, that Zuko, we know he's a known quantity, and these other people, like, well, they could just do anything.
Yeah.
They could set out. It's a little bit, if I love to have villains like that, where there's always someone that they're like, yeah, but we don't go over there. We don't deal with those people.
Yeah. Because
they're really bad. Like, the people that evil are scared of.
You know, I do love that. And, yeah, I think, like, that's what this episode seems to be all about. About, like,
yeah.
Showing the outer reaches of the world. Because really all we've had is the Southern Water Temple? No, Water Temple.
Yeah. Oh, not even the Water Temple. Water we've Tribe. Seen the South Pole.
South Pole, sorry.
Yeah.
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 So what were we going to say?
We see the map pretty regularly.
Yeah.
Like, we know that the rest of the world is out there. We've seen the map of the area, or of the world. We see, I'm pretty sure, yeah, it's in this episode where Zhao kind of, they cut back to him and he's been explaining the Fire Lord's plan. He's like, and that's how we'll rule the world. It's like, oh, okay, I'm glad we missed all of that.
Keep
us in suspense, will you?
It's a small world.
Yeah, it is.
Isn't it? Like, because when I was younger, I just had always assumed that, like, you know, this is just a part of the world. But then, with it being the South Pole, and then the other water tribe that they're trying to get to is in the North Pole, and you see the map, that's the world.
It's not far.
Yeah.
Like, I think it's in the next episode where they're talking about how long it's going to take them to get there. And, like, we won't get there before spring. It's like, really? Like, you're going pretty far. Like, that's probably how long I'd expect it to take for a flying bison. Like, how fast is Appa going?
Yeah, I know. I'm curious to know if there's any actual info about the actual size of the Avatar world.
For sure there is.
Yeah, I'm sure there is.
Someone's definitely worked it out. Because I like the idea of massive stretches of water like that.
Yeah.
Where there are just these small continents, and you've got Fire Nation Islands, then Earth Kingdom, which is a massive desert, essentially, or big land mass. Then you've got all the other stuff kind of all over the place. But it's just nice and simple.
Yeah.
My knowledge of what happens in Korra and, like, the history of Avatar now is starting to sneak in. I'm just like, oh, but what about this? I'm like, no, we're not talking about that yet. We're technically spoiler-free until we get there.
Yeah, exactly.
Because we could get into the weeds very easily on Lore of the World.
That's why it is hard sometimes with this podcast, because I love Avatar so much and I want to talk about that stuff. I'm like, nah, hang on, we have to wait. We have to pull back.
How do you feel about making a map for a world like this? Like, would you just go, okay, this is all there is? Or would you go, okay, well, you thought that was the North Pole, that's just the North area?
It depends on how I'm feeling, I guess. If I find that they've, like, if I've given them a map, I'm like, this is the world, and then they get around it very quickly, then I might hit them with the, oh, you thought that was the world, but this is only a portion of it. But then if it's like it takes them a very long time, like the entire campaign, then kind of, yeah, that was the world, I guess.
Yeah. It's very sandboxy.
Yeah.
But it still does feel like a big enough area that you wouldn't know everyone in this world. Like, there's a lot of people here.
Yeah.
Even if the Southern Water Tribe seems to be Katara and Sokka's family, and that's it.
Yeah, I know.
Oh, that's right. We were talking about the map and talking about, like, the overall plan of the Fire Nation.
Mm.
Which, yeah, I love the idea of being able to say to a party, okay, here's where you've got your map, and here's kind of where the enemies are, and you can wander around and avoid that as much as possible, but never giving them an idea of the overall plan, like what the evil people are doing. Unless they really want to investigate themselves.
Yeah.
So I like that kind of cutaway of we come in at the end of the conversation before Zhao really finds out. But we did also get to see in that scene just how important they see the Avatar.
Yeah. It's... go.
I was going to say that before it was very important. Like Zuko said it was important.
Yeah.
But it seemed like it was personal. Zuko very much made it about his personal honor to find the Avatar, but we didn't really know why the Fire Nation cared so much.
Yeah.
But now we do. Like, there's Zhao kind of goes into, okay, so this isn't just Zuko's little obsession. This is everyone.
Yeah. It's funny. Like, I never know whether to interpret it as... it's important to everyone because, like, he could genuinely be a danger, or if it's like a generational thing of like, well, the Avatar's a big deal, so we need to treat him as such. If that makes sense. Almost like maybe the world puts too much weight in someone like the Avatar.
It's a good point. It's like we see all the generations of the Avatar in the temple.
Yeah. And there's a lot of worship that seems to happen. Like, you can tell, like, in that temple, like, a statue of every single Avatar that's been, presumably. Like, yeah it's a lot of...
And we see that not only that, it's not just the Air Temple, it's, like, all the temples.
Yeah.
That put this effort in. So, but then again, thinking about that, like, that's just the Southern Air Temple. So that's just about the Air Nomads.
Yeah.
And then you've got the Fire Nation Temple and you've got the Earth Nation Temple. And I'm guessing there's a Water Nation Temple. I don't remember seeing that one. So clearly they've got their own little, this is where benders go.
Yeah.
If you know how to bend, then you have this temple and the Avatar is kind of your patron saint.
Yeah.
Of bending, because they factor in all four. They kind of bring everyone together. Maybe that's what it is, that because they bring everyone together, that's why they're so important.
Yeah, and that's probably why the Fire Nation doesn't want him, because they don't want people together.
Yeah. Because they do say the order of the Avatar reincarnation cycle, like Katara's like, what was it? Water, Earth, Fire, Air.
Yes, yeah. So, yeah, water's next.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that kind of makes sense why they tried to wipe the Air Nomads out to kill the Avatar.
Yeah, exactly. And, yeah, because the guy before... nothing, don't worry.
Well, I'm just thinking, because the guy before, like, obviously is fire. We see Avatar Roku. Like,
yeah, oh, that's this like, episode,
hey, look,
it?
It's Avatar
that's
Roku.
That's right, yeah. That is this episode.
Good. Yeah, we see Avatar Roku was a fire bender. Because Aang's all like, yeah, I remember that guy. He was me before me. And the Fire Nation's wiped out the Air Nomads, basically. And it seems like they're doing a pretty good job of wiping out the Waterbenders as well.
Yeah.
I'm just wondering, are they, like, trying to break the cycle by... They got rid of the Air Nomads, but clearly they didn't get the Avatar. So if they wipe out the Water Nation and then get the Avatar, is it broken because there's no... one for it to go to?
I don't think it's... The way I see it, I don't think that's how it works. Like, even if you wiped out all of the airbenders... Sorry, like, all of the waterbenders, I think the Avatar would still somehow be born as a waterbender.
Somehow, Palpatine returns.
Yeah, exactly. But, like, them attacking the Air Temple is because they knew at that time the Avatar should have already been born, I think.
Right.
So it's more like...
So it's a case of, we'll kill the child. Correct. Rather than wait for them to be a hero.
Well, I don't know if it was...
Okay.
Yeah, I don't know if it was kill the... Okay, it would have been, I guess, kill him, because they wiped them all out.
Yeah, kill the child.
Kill the child.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Creepy.
Because it's that thing of, like, you know, by the time the Avatar reincarnates and then grows up to be old enough to be a threat, then their plan would have already been done.
Yeah.
Which it kind of worked out for them anyway, because he fell in the water.
Yeah, it's been 100 years and Aang's not been really doing much in that time.
No.
So, yeah, great. I think that's probably just as useful as killing him, chucking him in a block of ice. It's useful. And I did like a little bit. There was a little bit of, like, RPG element when Katara and Sokka find the Fire Nation helmet.
Mm.
Because so far Aang's been all, no, the Fire Nation can never get up here because they can't fly. Like, there's no way anyone could get here. We're safe, totally safe. It just, they must be hiding. And that little, like, I feel like that's like a high perception role or an investigation or something where they've gone, okay, so you find this clue. And it's not like a drawing of, this is what the Fire Nation did. It's just, you find a Fire Nation helmet.
Mm.
And the players then put all the pieces together themselves.
Yeah.
Like, that was... Yeah, I like that little bit. And then also having secrets amongst the party of Katara and not telling Aang immediately, just letting him be a little bit more joyful for a bit longer.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, poor Aang. I did like that. It is sad. And with that as well, it really just, in the context of this show, it... really pushes this show into, I think, why it became popular and why, you know, people like myself love it so much, because it doesn't just stay as, like, it's a kid's show, so it's all, like, happy and fine, or everything resets at the end of the episode. It's like, we have these first two, which introduce us, and it's still pretty lighthearted. They're penguin sledding and things like that. And then we get to this, and it's, like... It's intense. It is intense at some points. Like, the skeletons. They show a skeleton, I think, at one point.
They do. Well, we see him as one of Aang's friends.
Yeah, it's like, not just a random skeleton. About
pies. Yeah, it's like, this is someone he knew and saw as a uncle figure of nothing else.
Yeah.
And it's like, yeah, that guy's dead. He'd been dead for a while. And looks like he... got killed by a whole bunch of people.
Yeah, and there's like a freaking grave of a whole like stack of bodies.
Yeah. So that's kind of dark.
Yeah, it is. And then even in the like the B story, if you want to call it, with Zuko, there's still like, it's not dark, but there's still like an emotional, like a mature emotional like story that you have there that isn't... When I say mature, like, do you know what I mean by, like, the way a lot of kids shows are very basic, very, like, learning things on how to share?
Yeah, well, it's not the, this is bad, and sometimes people are mean. It's like, well, sometimes people commit genocide, and that makes you feel bad.
Exactly.
But also that idea of, like, it's not just bad people who are mean.
Yeah.
It's like when Zuko's talking about we can't remember the name of the combat that Zuko and Zhao go into.
Yeah.
Like, there's a thing of Iroh going, don't you remember the last time you did this? And it pans over to Zuko's scarred eyes, like, I'm never going to forget that. Mm. It's like, that's dark. Like, he's gone through trauma already.
Yeah.
And that's that reminder of, like, good people can be very, very scarred.
Yeah.
Or, you know, bad people can be very, very scarred as well, but they may have, yeah, it's... There's adult themes that are presented to children,
I guess. Yeah.
And then there's also, like, wacky hijinks as they try to eat a lemur.
Exactly.
And that was... That was super D&D to me.
Yeah, no, absolutely.
Like, we're talking about this off air, where it's like a D&D party has encountered something that they don't necessarily have to fight immediately. It's either going to be dinner or it's going to be a pet. Like, there's only one of two options, really. And there's always going to be someone who will go, can I pat it? And the other person's like, no, 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 no. We're going to hunt this thing and kill it. And that's going to be dinner. And usually if it does stay like that, it's people seeing that constant attempt of trying to eat the pet. It's like having Alf in the party. So I'm just gonna eat your horse. Yeah. But I think that this is also something that kind of does that dichotomy, that divide that you were just talking about with like the kids show versus the adult show, mm-hmm. or the kids show versus the kids themes versus the adult themes. That Aang is very much, oh my gosh, it's a cute little lemur, it's going to be my pet. Whereas Sokka is thinking about the more realistic needs that they have.
Yeah.
Which is they need to eat.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how cute Momo ends up being, they still got to eat.
Yeah, and he's just come from living his life of trying to provide for this village and try to protect his village. So, of course, he's going to be thinking about feeding them.
Yeah.
And even
he's also a growing teenage boy.
Yeah. And even this is why it's, there are some shows that try to mix and match mature and young themes, and they seem to be at odds with each other, almost not gelling. But then you have that scene in this episode where Aang is wanting to play that game that with the ball.
Air ball.
And you have that funny scene, the slapstick comedy of Sokka getting hit and falling off. But the whole scene is presented like Sokka's doing it because he doesn't... he wants to cheer Aang up.
Yeah, or he wants to give Aang a few more moments of pleasure before it really sinks in that everyone he knows is gone.
Yeah. And they mix those two together so well. It's like Sokka and Katara are the
older people. Yeah. It's tied in so easily because you do still have that fun element and it's almost immediately dragging it back down.
Mm.
I do like the mood shift. We're going to talk about tone like we did in the last couple episodes.
Yeah.
That mood shift of always lightening a dark scene or bringing down a light scene.
Yeah.
And I feel that this, it does the bringing down of light scenes, but dark scenes are just let to sit.
Yeah.
Because I feel there's a lot of light scenes.
Yeah, there is.
Yeah. They're able to, they extend the lighter stuff so that the darker stuff has a bit more impact.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly.
It's not just a wacky creature. They have the little bit of the, when Momo shows up, it's like, is this a creature from, is this a Fire Nation person who's come to get us? No, it's a cute little lemur. And then we've got wacky hijinks and they were running around and they were doing all this laughing. So there's three, four upbeats and then a downbeat when that leads to the discovery of the dead monk.
Whew.
Yeah, I think that's a good way of doing a grimmer game without necessarily making it a very dark game.
Yeah, because you don't want that. I think most people anyway, some people do. I find a lot of people, they don't like the idea of it just being all doom and gloom all the time. Even if they want a more serious game, the nature of Dungeons and Dragons and other role-playing games, usually people at the table, they're making jokes at each other, they're goofing off as characters. So you want to incorporate, you want to allow for that as well, because you don't want as the game master, you don't want to be discouraging that either. If they're having fun, allow them to, but still it's good, you can use it to your advantage, then hit them with the reality of the world that they're goofing around in.
It's having that release of the table is very important.
Yeah.
Because it's just an avenue for letting the emotion out when it has been building up.
Yeah.
And then returning to it. But I find it particularly good if you can do that step in, step out of character element. That if you can... my computer just made a noise and I'm I'm worried about what it means. But I can still hear you, so that's okay. But step in and step out of character, that if you're doing those very intense moments in character,
yeah,
and then you can step out of character and make the joke and then step back in.
Yeah.
And that gives you that release to go back under. It's like, it's the breath, I guess.
Yeah.
It's the breath for the, what do you call it? When you're swimming. It's like you dive under the water and you swim, 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 up for a breath. Swim, 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 up for a breath. This is how I swim, actually. When I'm swimming, I always say swim, 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 swim under the breath.
Yeah, like you say swim under the water, do you? Is that what?
Yeah.
Yeah, yeah, cool.
Yeah. Is that not how the Olympians do it?
Yeah, pretty sure that's how they do it.
Okay, good. Okay, good. It's the Olympics this year, so I'll keep an eye out for it. I am a great believer that any sport, they should have to yell the name of the sport when they're doing it. So golf, when you swing and hit the ball, you have to yell golf as it hits it. It's more fun in tennis, but I think golf works too. And that ties in because we were talking about airball earlier.
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's how that all ties in. See, we've thought this through. Yeah.
It's all connected. It's all connected. Speaking of like lighthearted stuff, I want to, well, quickly, we'll go back to the like the pranks in camp when Sokka doesn't want to get up and Aang's like, oh my God, there's a snake in your sleeping bag. Kind of thing. It's like, that's really fun.
Yeah.
That's just that fun start off of this is what's happening. But I think that aspect of the camping and the food that Sokka is so focused on, it used to be a big thing in D&D.
Yeah.
Like, management of resources was key to a lot of the adventures that would have. It's like, okay, so it's 3 days to such and such. You've only got 2 days worth of food. What do you do? Do you got to go hunting? Now, is that something you still do in longer campaigns, or do you hand wave and focus on something else for the game?
Not really. It does kind of depend. Like with that, I've mentioned it before, that pirate campaign I was doing, I was originally going to worry about like food and stuff, but because they were managing a boat and managing kind of the financing stuff there, then I kind of didn't worry about it. They also did hire a chef, so that helped. He sorted that shit out.
that's a great way of describing. He sorted that shit out good.
Yeah, it's, I don't know, it's not like, not something I've really focused on. Not that I'm against it either. It really just depends on the vibe of the world or the adventure you're doing. If I was doing an adventure in like a jungle type setting, then I would make sure I put an emphasis on food.
Mm-hmm.
Or yeah, or like a long trek across, you know, across
a desert or something.
Yeah. But no, it's not something I've really made a big focus on myself.
Ooh.
What about you?
I'm pretty much the same. I'll make a focus on it at the start of a campaign most of the time, and maybe even start of an adventure. But I usually discard it pretty quickly. And part of that is because of the way D&D handles spells and magic and just gives people options to hand wave all that stuff away.
Mm-hmm.
So it's not a factor anymore. Like Goodberry, as soon as they get Goodberry, I stop caring about how much food they have.
Yeah.
Like it literally is a spell, which means, hey, you take a pill, you're fine for a day.
Yeah.
And you can cast it every day. Or one person can cast every day. And it's a ritual, so you don't even have to worry about a spell slot. But similar for like tracking ammo or tracking like whether you got to go and pick up your axe after you've thrown it at someone, that kind of thing. I don't do it after a certain point. I do it at the beginning to give people a sense of realism, but I very quickly find that they always look for ways to get around it. And once, as soon as they do, I'm like, yeah, that's the status quo for the rest of the game then.
Yeah.
Because if you're looking for a way around it, then clearly you either don't find it fun or you want to hand wave it away.
Yeah.
If you're focusing on it and like every time you go into town, you're going, okay, well, we need more supplies, so I'm going to go pick up more supplies. Then that's someone who wants to play that game of resource management.
Yeah.
And I'll I'll tie that in. I'll make sure that they've got something to do. But most of the time, people are like, oh, how many supplies? How many days is it? Cool, we buy that many supplies.
Yeah.
It's like, the end. We're done with that. Like, I think an ongoing game I'm running at the moment, I don't think I've actually had them buy supplies in about 20 weeks. And a lot of that is because they've either been traveling around with someone who's got food or they're in a city and it's easy to get. But sometimes it's just, yeah, it takes you 3 days. I can't be bothered figuring it out. Don't mark off 3 rations. You went hunting or something. Or you killed an elk 2 sessions ago. It was a massive elk. It was bigger than like a house. You've got food.
Yeah.
Because I don't want to track that stuff sometimes either.
Yeah,
Unless it
exactly. Yeah.
becomes any unless it's part of the game. Like traveling across a desert, that is the encounter. That is the part of the adventure. So that's the aspect of it. But
Yeah.
I do find that once I remove those elements, like the resource management of keeping track of bolts for crossbows or food or for conditions like the cold weather conditions, I usually bring in something to do with the environment as an encounter, like a rock slide or a tornado or like a flooded river or something like that, that they still have to interact with in some way.
Yeah, okay, yeah.
And I find that kind of hits that right level of realism for it. Like if
Yeah.
I do that, they're not really asking too often, like, oh, they're still feeling like travel and their non-combat or non-dungeon time means something.
Yeah.
Like the amount of time you can get of having make a fully armored party trying to cross a river without a bridge. It's so much fun. This is one of those ones where it's like, okay, I have nothing planned, but the river's flooded. You're on one side, you got to get across the other. What do you come
Yep.
up with? Oh, is there a bridge? Nah. I guess we build a raft. All right, how do you do that? Like, just keep asking them questions until they've come up with an idea. And great, that's resource management. It's exactly the same thing. That's when they start going through and go, oh, I've got some rope that I never use. I guess we could use that to lash it
Oh, I've got
together.
some ball bearings. Oh, do
Yeah. Oh, good. I'm glad you got those. Those are going to come in handy. I miss my ball bearings, honestly. The number of times I'm, as a rogue, I'm just like, I don't know what to do. You know what? Ball bearing time. It's ball bearing time, everyone. Get some caltrops down there, some ball bearings on the next one. It's great. It's great fun. Oh, that actually ties into the next point I wanted to make. This is a very simple little one, but how Aang gets into the Air Temple. With the special door that only airbenders can open.
Oh, yeah.
Now, I love this as this. It's not really a trap, but it's a puzzle.
Yeah.
And can you imagine this one as, let's say, okay, it's not the Avatar and his crew coming up to the Air Temple. It's some sort of adventuring party who need to speak or need to get inside. And they're faced with that door.
Yeah.
And it seems really easy. Like they can easily see how it works. But then they suddenly have this puzzle of, well, how do we do it?
Yeah.
Because we can't be airbenders.
What's
And though
I was gonna
I was
say,
going to say,
I was
these are the
gonna
kind of traps and puzzles I love to build for a party
Yeah.
because it means that whoever created this had an easy way of getting around it that the party just doesn't have.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but what would make something like that really good in a in RPG sense is if like a session or two ago they came across an airbender and they barred him off. And then they're like, "No, you're not coming along with us." And they come across this door and like, "Oh, that airbender would have come in so handy right
Yeah. It's like, I
now."
didn't expect this door to be a like a serious problem for you because I gave you the NPC 3 sessions ago, but here we are. I guess you're stuck with it now. Oh, no, that's exactly what I think would have happened in any other game.
Yeah. And again, even something like as simple as that little thing, it like in terms of an RPG, good as like a small little barrier and a possible puzzle. And then in terms of world building, it's just another piece of showing how these people live, like in the air temple and stuff, and
Yeah.
using air like air bending in their everyday lives.
Yeah, it's this great theme of you can't get to the air temple unless you can airbend, but you can't even
Yeah.
get inside unless you can airbend either. Like, you can come as a guest, but only the people who are meant to be there can be there.
Yeah. And it's I was gonna say it before, I forgot to say it. It kind of with that whole talking about the world map and stuff and you know the different places, it's kind of it's a very simple world map, and it's I've fallen into the trap before when making maps and making worlds and stuff of trying to make it too realistic as well, and trying to be like, oh well, this needs to be more like how it would be in real life, and forgetting that we're
Thinking
in
how the
a
clouds would have hit the mountains and like
yeah.
it would be a desert after that because the rain falls on the other side.
Yeah.
Yeah, I've done that.
Yeah, no, there are full cat people and fish people walking around. You're fine if it's not fully realistic.
It's
But
magic.
yeah, and especially like it's really pointed out in like people love this world that the Avatar takes place in, but it is really simple in concept. There are the air people, the fire people, the water people, and the earth people, and all of their places that they live at are just really like representative of those different elements. And like a good example, I think, in building your world and doing stuff like that, it's good to look at something like building your world like the map in a Legend of Zelda game, which is very similar to this. It's you have the Gorons, the rock people, who are in the mountain, and it's hot, and there's rocks, and then you have the water people, and it's that basic thing where you have the you grab like the one main concept or visual element, and you just kind of run with it. Doesn't matter if it doesn't fully make sense, because people, the players aren't gonna always remember the intricate little stuff. It will be like, oh, this place was built, and there's all these waterfalls around, and sometimes the, I don't know, the main town square floats around on the water and goes different places.
That sounds cool.
Yeah, but like, I just mean like that's what players are gonna remember as well. It's the big kind of grand stuff, especially when you have a world like this where the different places you go to are so drastically different from each other. It makes every one of them stand out.
I think that having the concept first and then coming up with the reason why it's like that
Yeah.
is so much better. I think,
Yeah.
there's a thing in the Discworld novels where there was a constant reference to a place called Treacle Mine Road, and that's just a nice little, that's a fun word to say, Treacle Mine Road. And for those who don't know treacle, treacle being a sort of a sap type sugarcane golden syrup sort of thing, there really were mines of this stuff. And then he built it into the lore of, hey, treacle is something that people do mine. That you can go down and you find all these big veins of like crystallized sugar, which you're then able to mine and sell off as crystallized sugar. And it's like that's just a little phrase. You came up with a word that you really liked, and hey, now you've got the thing. You wanted an area where there's all these waterfalls. All right, well, what are the people who live there like? What have they got that makes them happy to live near these waterfalls?
Yeah,
It's
exactly.
a kind of,
It's
I guess, is that building from the top down or from the bottom up for
I
the
don't know
world?
actually that
I feel like that one's top down. Like you've got the
Yeah.
high concept of what everything's like, and then you're getting down to the nitty-gritty of what is that like on a daily basis.
Yeah. But yeah, kind of like with what I was just go for it. Whatever weird, wacky concept. I had a tabaxi village, tabaxi in Dungeons and Dragons, like cat people, and they lived in a big, I called it yarn ball, but it wasn't, it was made out of wood, but there it was like kind of the, it was all twisted and turned and all these like kind of circular wooden pathways that from a distance look like a big sphere, so it was called yarn ball or whatever it was. It was stupid. It doesn't necessarily make any sense, and it's impractical. But who cares? There were cats, and there was a big yarn ball that they lived in, and that was the end of that. Like,
I love that my brain immediately went, no, that makes sense for cats. Because cats can easily find their way, but they have all these crisscrossing paths,
well,
and
that is
each of them
kind
has
of
their own
yeah.
little track.
That is kind of the intricacies of that I then went into when I made the concept. Like, it's really annoying to get around. It's all overlapping, but the cats, they climb their way up there easy. But for anyone else, it's like a really annoying place to kind of navigate.
But a great way to make something unique and flavorful and fun to have encounters in too, because you're putting people out of their comfort zone and putting it into somebody else's comfort zone, so you get to use the environment with them.
Yeah.
That's fun. Yeah. Speaking of encounters, I just wanted to quickly talk about like the trial by combat thing that Zuko does. And partly this felt like a really cool way to get Zuko's character to get to show off some of the cool stuff he didn't get to do in the fight against Sokka last time, because of that fucking boomerang. And also a little bit like Iroh's there to have his back every single time.
Yeah.
But I like that. Like, trial by combat, that's a classic idea for D&D too, isn't it?
Yeah.
To go, okay, well, this is a game heavily focused on combat. Let's have a lot of the time it's like, go out and fight the monster, or the only way to defeat this monster is through fighting. I was just listening to Mastering Dungeons, and Teos Abadio on there was saying how to run a 30-minute session of D&D for beginners. And rather than just have an entire combat, have them talking with someone who says like, all right, to prove to me that you're strong, you have to fight me for 10 seconds. And that's enough to have like everyone have a couple of turns of combat, but they're not going to beat each other.
Yeah.
It's like an opportunity for everyone to kind of let loose and see how these things work. And this felt like a little bit like that, that Zuko's character didn't get a chance to try a lot of these things. So it's like, all right, well, here's a situation where it's just one-on-one, it's lore, it's world building, and it like adds to the lore, but it's also a chance where you can have that fight.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. Just go all out.
Yeah.
Yeah. And also, yeah.
And then also add to the characterization of, well, are you going to kill him? No.
Yeah.
That's not who I am. That's who he is, but that's not who I am.
And it also, in terms of, like, I nearly said Sokka as well, Zuko and his story, he blunders it when he comes across Aang and stuff for the first time. Like, he kind of comes in all menacingly and then is kind of made a fool of, like multiple times in the two episodes. And so you get the idea of, oh, maybe he isn't that good. And then you see him in this fight and no, he is absolutely that good, even when he's emotional about it. But it just goes to show the real big like emotional hold that the Avatar and the concept of the Avatar has on him. Like, he just, he stuffs up every time when he approaches them. Like, it clouds him a lot. But he is, absolutely capable of taking out Aang. And, like, you know, I think this it's
also that element of one-on-one, he is stronger than Aang.
Yeah.
Like, we see that. He takes on Zhao, and it's one-on-one, and he's better than him.
Yeah.
But Aang is more than just himself.
Exactly.
He's got Katara, and he's got Sokka, and he's got allies, and he's got Appa. It's like there's more to him than just the one person.
Yeah.
But Zuko is very much like, no, it's me. I fight alone.
Even though he does have Iroh, he can take anyone. He tends to try to ignore that.
Yeah, he does have Iroh, but he does ignore that. But that's the thing, that Iroh has his back when he's not looking. Like, when Zuko's not in that mode, when he's not expecting it, that's when Iroh is protecting him. But yeah, I guess it's the same thing, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah. I like Zuko. He's fun.
Love Zuko.
Just to that moment is, Uncle, talk about a shower, what happened?
It's so good.
Oh, okay. I guess I tell him now. Okay. Such a, I didn't think about that. I didn't read my notes. It's fine. all right, well, let's wrap up there. I think we've covered everything that happened in the Southern Air Temple. We've doubled the length of the actual episode itself, so why not? Thank you, everyone. Thank you, everyone, for listening. Please tune in next week when we'll talk about the Warriors of Kyoshi. Honestly, I really like the Warriors of Kyoshi. It's one of my favorite episodes. And subscribe wherever podcasts are found, because that's a great way to make sure that you hear the episode. Share us with a friend too. That'd be really good too. Gets us out to more listeners. Or leave a rating and review on the podcast app catcher of your choice, whether that's iTunes or Podbean or Spotify or all those other apps. We really appreciate it. And when we get some of those, I'm going to read them out and be like, hey, look, you're awesome. You're a cool person who reads things, who reads ratings. Good for you. Yay. And we really appreciate that too. Or if you just want to send us emails, you can at dndntvpod@gmail.com. Or come over and find us on socials. The Instagram is at dndntvpod. My personal socials for Instagram are at Taluman, TALUMIN83. Same on Blue Sky, which is now open to the public. So if you want to get to Blue Sky and avoid the Bird app, or the former, the artist formerly known as the Bird app, yeah, come over there and see what I'm going to be posting about. Sometimes it's cool little messages I get from real estate agents, which are really fun to mock. Danny, where can people find you online?
You can find me on Instagram at danny.calamari. Other than that...
Anything else to plug?
Well, I've got something that I'm doing... I'm coming up, but I think by the time we release this podcast, I probably would have already done it, but I will be at the Game Expo running a game there of Dungeons & Dragons. So
when's that? Is that?
That is this Saturday.
Oh, so that's going to be like the 23rd of March. Which yes. is definitely gone.
Yeah.
At this stage. All right. That's definitely. Well, bye. I hope everyone had fun there.
Yes. Game Expo was fantastic or bad.
Yes.
Who knows?
One or the other. Or both. It could have been both. I'm going to assume that you're there with Masters of Alchemy, the premier game mastering service in Melbourne.
I'm not actually.
To Fortress in. Okay, yeah, but I'm doing a bit.
Okay. So, I mean, yes, okay. I am.
Yeah, definitely. No, whatever. Who we go there with is, I'm sure, is very fun too. But come along to Fortress Emporium on Melbourne's. You can find bookings for Dungeons and Flagons, which both Danny and myself do through Masters of Alchemy. Or just check out the Masters of Alchemy site, which is mastersofalchemy.au. For more D&D goodness and hopefully other goodness too, because playtesting for Daggerheart is out and I'm loving it. So that's just just a little bit of thing. What else do I need to cover? I've done that bit. I've done that bit too. So I guess all that's left to say is thank you again for listening. Stay safe, be kind to yourselves, and may all your hits be crits.
Yep, yep.
This podcast is recorded on the traditional lands of the Wurundjeri people. Always was, always will be. We pay our respects to their elders past, present, and emerging.